Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Lessons from the world's top professors. Anytime, anyplace. World history examined and science explained. This is One Day University. Welcome. And we're back on the untold history of sports in America. I'm your host, Mike Coscarelli. Last time, we discussed the journey of one of the greatest American sports heroes of all time, Jackie Robinson. Today, we'll be discussing international sports again as the Cold War takes a hold of the USA. You'll learn how our feud with the communists fueled Olympic competition and how the rivalry affected physical fitness in America. Yeah. Did you embarrass yourself trying to do pull-ups in gym class? Well, blame the Russians. Here's Matt with more.
Today, we're going to explore the links between American sport and the Cold War. And look, I know you know this, but I feel like I'm supposed to say this at least once. It's called the Cold War because there were few actual hot military conflicts between the two nations, you know, few actual exchanges of bombs and bullets between the United States and the Soviet Union. The Cold War was fought in many venues, though, and in many ways. It was an ideological battle between these two nations, you know, two nations whose leaders believed that their economic and their political systems were best. It was a military contest that was waged on the battlefields of places like Korea and Vietnam and Afghanistan, where Americans and Soviets fought against people from other nations, but not against each other. The Cold War was a scientific race to see who could get a man into space first, who could develop the most powerful weapons of mass destruction. You know, this was a race that almost led to nuclear war in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the Cold War was an athletic battle as well. Every 4 years, the Olympic Games provided a theater for the Cold War, where the athletes from the United States and the USSR competed face-to-face. And the medal count provided another way to gauge which of these two superpowers was the most powerful of all. And that's our topic today, the way the United States and the Soviet Union use sports to try to demonstrate their superiority compared to the other. You know, maybe one day American and Soviet soldiers would go toe-to-toe in a hot war military battle. But until they did, the Olympic Games provided an alternate venue in which to watch and gauge international power. We're going to talk about what happened when Americans started losing to the Soviets at the Olympic Games. There were some very interesting and unexpected consequences. I think you will be intrigued. Let's go back a bit. Last time we discussed the Olympics, we were talking about Jesse Owens and the 1936 Games in Berlin. Well, the next two scheduled Olympic Games, they never happened. Both the 1940 and the 1944 Olympic Games, they were canceled because of World War II. And so the first Olympics of the Cold War era, you know, right after World War II, they took place in 1948 in London. The Soviet Union did not participate in these games. They were still reeling from a war that killed 21 million Soviet soldiers and citizens. And let me repeat that, 21 million. By contrast, the United States had lost 600,000 soldiers. Not an insignificant number at all, but not 21 million either. With many European nations still devastated by the war, it was the much healthier U.S. Olympic team that dominated the 1948 Olympics. You know, for example, there was a 17-year-old kid named Bob Matthias. He graduated from a California high school in June, and then he won the Olympic decathlon just 2 months later. When asked what he was going to do to celebrate, he said, "Start shaving, I guess." But by the next Olympics, the whole vibe would be different. The rest of the world would be back on its feet. Global diets were improved. Athletes everywhere were more fit. But another reason that 1952 was different is that the Soviet Union was there. The history of sport in the Soviet Union is different than sports in the United States, or at least it starts differently. Initially, the leaders of the Soviet Union ignored international sports, or more accurately, they rejected international sports. As the Soviet leaders saw it, international sports and the Olympic Games, these were the playthings of the West, the capitalist West. Competition and the obsession with winning and setting records, these are symptoms of nations with competitive capitalist systems, winners and losers. And so the Soviets said, "We're not interested in these sports. The Olympics, that's what the Americans do. That's what the Nazis do." But after World War II, the Soviet leadership is going to change its mind. After the war, in order to try to maximize their influence throughout the world, and in order to try to counter the influence of that other superpower, the United States, the Soviets are going to begin competing in international sports. Soviet leaders are going to embark on an athletic project, really with one goal in mind: to defeat the United States at the Olympic Games. And so the Soviets got busy. After the war, the Soviet government created something called the National Research Institute for Sports Culture. And what this institute did was it ran sports training sites across the country where they looked for young athletic talent. You know, Soviet boys and girls, they stood in line and then showed off their gymnastics skills, their ice hockey skills. And the best and most promising talent, it was then sent to Moscow for advanced training, where these young Soviets would be molded into future Olympic athletes. Now, for many Americans, this Soviet sports system was the perfect example of what was wrong with the Soviet Union. Here was a system in which individuals did not have free choice. A system in which they were directed where to go and told what to do by their government. But for Soviet officials, this was exactly what the socialist system could achieve. Everyone pitching in, doing their part, developing whatever particular skill they possessed, and using that skill for the betterment of the nation. So here's the key idea at these Cold War Olympic Games. You know, on the one hand, we might argue that a victory in international sports is meaningless. Fine. That American can throw the javelin further, or that Soviet is the best at the high jump. So what? Who cares? But if you dig deeper, the question being answered at these Cold War Olympics is this: who has the better system in which to create strong human beings? Which nation has the best system for maximizing human potential? Is it a system based on individualism and competition, you know, American capitalism? Or is it a socialist system in which centralized planning is emphasized, you know, in which everything is directed by the state and athletes are said to represent the collective and selfless essence of communism? Both sides, the Americans and the Soviets, Both sides said, our system is best, and we're going to prove it at the Olympic Games. So this was not just sports. These Cold War Olympic Games were referendums on the political system of each nation. It wasn't a javelin toss or a basketball game or a wrestling match. It was our way of life against theirs. So the Soviets attend their first Olympic Games in the summer of 1952. These games were in Helsinki, Finland. And by 1952, the Cold War was red hot, or ice cold. I'm actually not sure how that goes. In 1949, the Soviets had detonated their own atomic bomb. That superpower just got more powerful. The US and the USSR, they found themselves on opposite sides of the Korean War. The US had soldiers in Korea, and the Soviets were supplying the Chinese and the North Korean troops that the Americans were fighting against. By 1952, the world seemed caught up in an all-out struggle between the American way of life and the Soviet way of life. And then came the Olympic Games. There was a widely read columnist for the New York Times. His name is Arthur Daly. And just before these games, just before they began, he gave his American readers a sense of what was at stake. He wrote, "There will be 71 nations in the Olympics at Helsinki. The United States would like to beat all of them. But the only one that counts is Soviet Russia. The communist propaganda machine must be silenced. In sports, the Red Brothers have reached the put-up or shut-up stage. Let's shut them up." It's in the context of the Cold War that the medal count became a phenomenon at the Olympic Games. And this means counting up which nation won how many medals and then saying which nation had won the Olympic Games. The International Olympic Committee, they always wagged their finger and they said, no such counting is allowed, but everyone did it. And the accepted practice back then was to give a nation 3 points for a gold, 2 for a silver, and 1 for a bronze. And I think this is reasonable. So let's apply this to Helsinki. The American domination in past Olympic Games, it came from their victories in men's track and field and swimming. And that's where many of the American medals came from here in Helsinki. But the Soviets came into their first Olympics having rigorously prepared for every event, gymnastics, fencing, wrestling, weightlifting, shooting, everything. And where the Soviets really had the Americans' number, and where they will have it for the next few Olympic Games, is in women's sports. The Soviets were better in women's sports than the Americans because the Soviets actually cared about and supported female athletes. They spent resources on women's athletics. There was no system for women's sports in the United States. There was no investment coming from the state. The colleges and universities that turned out great male athletes in the U.S., they totally ignored women's sports. And now this sexism was going to hurt the United States in the medal count. At the 1952 Games, the Soviets got out to an early lead in the medal count on the strength of their female athletes. And some Americans complained about this. That New York Times columnist, Arthur Daly, he argued that women's sports shouldn't be part of the medal count. Well, sorry, macho man, they count. The United States did storm back based on their domination of the track and field events, and the Americans did win the medal count using that 3-2-1 system. It was 175 points for the Americans, 145 for the Soviets. So this was an American victory. But the United States was a longtime Olympic veteran. The Soviets, they were rookies at these games. It was not nearly as big a victory as many Americans expected. And then the medal count would change at the next Olympics in 1956. These 1956 games were in Melbourne, Australia. And with 4 more years of training behind them, the Soviets routed the Americans. They won more of every kind of medal, more gold, more silver, more bronze. The final tally was 201 for the USSR, 163 for the USA. And this loss at the Olympic Games. And that is how Americans thought about it. If we don't win the most medals, if the Soviets win more than us, it's a loss. This loss unleashed a lot of soul searching in the United States. You know, American leaders said, we need to do better. And let's talk about what came next. Because if you grew up in the United States, what happened next had an effect on your life. American leaders decided that if we wanted to compete with the Soviet sports machine, and that's how the USSR was described in the United States. They possessed an almost inhuman sports machine. Well, if we wanted to compete against that machine, something had to change. The 1956 Olympic Games suggested that Soviets were stronger than Americans. Americans were weaker than Soviets. And one of the culprits, some argued, was our national wealth. Critics pointed to the affluence of American culture and argued that American children were spoiled. They were soft. And I think this is interesting because American affluence, our material affluence, it was often held up as a sign of American superiority to the Soviets. You know, our powerful automobiles and our modern kitchen appliances, the widespread availability of these creature comforts, comforts that most Soviet citizens didn't have. This was evidence, many said, of the superiority of the American system. But here a different argument is being made. The exact opposite argument is being made. Here, the argument is that all this affluence has made Americans weak. You know, sitting in their air-conditioned homes, eating TV dinners, drinking Coca-Cola, and watching Saturday morning cartoons, all this has made American children soft. Suddenly, there was anxiety that America was a nation of weaklings. And so in response, you get a Cold War-era push to whip American school children into shape. And it comes straight from the top. In 1955, President Dwight Eisenhower created the President's Council on Youth Fitness. And this was a direct response to the growing belief that American children were less fit than their Soviet counterparts. And so this was created 1 year before the disaster of 1956, but the program was emphasized even more after those Olympic Games. And the goal of this program was to encourage physical fitness among young Americans. Push-ups, pull-ups, the standing broad jump. This would now be part of the everyday school curriculum of American children, just like math or spelling. Did you do the presidential fitness test as a kid in elementary school? Well, that's where it comes from. It was a test created in the 1950s as a way to mold American school children, you know, you and me, into future Olympic athletes. We need to win the Cold War Olympic medal count against the Soviets. We need to toughen up American kids, so let's test them. Let's challenge them in sports. I vividly remember I had my certificate from Jimmy Carter attesting to the fact that I could achieve a certain standard in five events. Though I'm going to come clean right here and right now with the microphone in front of me and the recorder on. I want to admit that I cheated on the pull-ups. I didn't think it was fair that you had to do the pull-ups front-handed, you know, with your knuckles facing you. So a pull-up and not an underhanded chin-up. I could do chin-ups, but for some reason I couldn't do pull-ups. So I lied about my number. I know, terrible. But in my defense, this was the 1970s, you know, so I did all this in the shadow of Watergate. So I think it's justifiable. But my point right now is not that I lied to my government. My point is that those tests were a direct response to the Cold War. In the name of winning the Cold War Olympics and demonstrating to the world the superiority of the American system, Johnny and Sally need to be more fit than Sergey and Svetlana.
After the break, Wilma Rudolph dominates.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Here's another long-lasting result of the Soviet performance at the Olympic Games in the 1950s. Since medal counts did not discriminate based on sex, Americans realized we need to do a better job developing women's sports. A gold medal won by a female athlete counts for 3 points, just like a gold medal won by a male athlete. And the Soviet Union and the other Eastern European nations, they had developed their women's sports programs. They were far ahead of the United States when it came to funding and developing women's sports. I mean, they actually cared about women's sports in the Soviet Union. So now the United States needed to catch up. There's a lesson here. Sometimes progress comes from unpredictable places. And that's the case here. Because it's losing the Cold War medal count that prompted Americans to finally start to care at least a little bit about their female athletes. Now, real progress in this arena is not going to come until the 1970s when Congress passes Title IX and mandates that schools spend money on girls and women's sports programs. And we will talk about that. But what happens here in the 1950s and early 1960s is this, and I find this fascinating. The Cold War made America care about their female athletes. And especially, and somewhat surprisingly, if you know the history of American sports, the black female athlete. The Cold War took the African-American female athlete who lived in almost absolute obscurity, and it turned those black female athletes into national heroes. They became celebrated Cold Warriors. Until the Cold War, black female athletes were little more than an afterthought in American culture. I mean, they were certainly off the radar of the American press. And I mean both the white press and the black press. Almost no one wrote about black female athletes. Black female athletes were doubly discriminated against. They were discriminated against and ignored because they were black. And in the masculine world of sport, they were discriminated against and ignored because they were women. It was a double burden. This is the story of black women in the 20th century more generally, discriminated against because of their race and their sex. But in the world of sports, it's the Cold War that's going to lead to a rethinking of this. It's going to lead to a celebration of the black female athlete in the United States, or at least a celebration when they can help the United States win the medal count. The best example is a young black woman from Tennessee, Wilma Rudolph. The story of Wilma Rudolph is one of those stories that just makes you proud to be a human being. I mean, it's the story of the American dream, the rise from very humble beginnings to fame and glory. Let me just very briefly tell you her story because it's amazing. Wilma Rudolph was born in 1940 in Clarksville, Tennessee, and she was the 20th of 22 children. So her mother deserves a gold medal. When she was 6 years old, she was diagnosed with polio, and she spent a full year in bed. And then her legs were placed in cumbersome metal braces. And every night, her mother would come home from her job as a maid, and she would massage her daughter's aching legs late into the evening. At age 12, Wilma finally got to remove these braces, and she exercised as a way of overcoming her disability. And after years of being pent up in those braces, her speed was unleashed. You ever read the book or seen the film Forrest Gump? You know, young Forrest is saddled with cumbersome leg braces, which one day he sheds, and it is revealed that he is a tremendous runner. Well, the author of that book, Winston Groom, he got his inspiration for that storyline from Wilma Rudolph. Anyway, one day while playing basketball in high school, Wilma Rudolph was spotted by a guy named Edward Temple. He was the track coach at nearby Tennessee State. This was a segregated, all-black college. Wilma Rudolph went to Tennessee State, and she ran for the Tennessee State Tiger Bells. That was their nickname, a mix of tigers and Southern Bells. And these Tiger Bells, they dominated the next Cold War Olympic Games, the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. Wilma Rudolph in particular dominated. She won 3 gold medals, the 100 meters, the 200 meters, and then the 4x100 meter relay. Rudolph was the American star of the 1960 Summer Olympics, and the press, they loved her. They followed her everywhere, and men too, including a young, love-struck American boxer who also won a gold medal at those games, Cassius Clay, soon to go by the name Muhammad Ali. Cassius Clay was infatuated with Wilma Rudolph. She said that Clay talked too much. We'll do a deep dive on Cassius Clay next time. But the Cold War is the reason that black female athletes like Rudolph were suddenly given the attention and some of the resources that they deserved. Because once again, now they weren't just black female athletes. Now they were cold warriors. The Cold War provided the international setting in which these black female athletes could become national sports heroes. Let me dig just a little bit deeper here. Maybe the most interesting thing that happened was not just that national support for black female athletes increased, but some of the longtime, widely held disparaging views about black women in general, they began to change as well. You know, the propaganda coming from both the United States Olympic Committee and the American press, they suddenly worked very hard to accentuate the grace and the beauty and the femininity of black female athletes, especially in comparison to what at that same time the American press described as the mannishness of their Soviet and Eastern European counterparts. If you grew up in the Cold War era, you're familiar with the stereotype. Russian and Eastern European female athletes were described over and over in the American press as hairy, thick-thighed, unattractive Siberian women. By contrast, Wilma Rudolph and the other Tennessee State Tiger Bells, they were suddenly being celebrated as graceful, beautiful, feminine beings. It's a problematic quote, but it speaks to this phenomenon. One of the track coaches for the 1960 Olympic team was Ed Temple, Wilma Rudolph's coach back at Tennessee State. When comparing the young women of his program to the Soviet female athletes, Ed Temple liked to say, "We're foxes, not oxes." I know it's pretty sexist from our modern perspective, but think about what's going on here. In the context of the Cold War, the femininity of these black female athletes is being emphasized as a counterpoint to the stereotype of mannish Soviet female athletes. And I want to impress upon you, for an American culture that had long described black women in terribly demeaning ways, describing black women, you know, as anything but feminine and beautiful, well, what's going on now marked a change in thinking. Here's an interesting term. Oval tracks were made of crushed cinder. So some creative soul came up with the idea of calling these black female Olympic track stars Cinderellas, a name that suggested their beauty, their femininity. In the context of the Cold War, the once ignored and marginalized Black female athlete, well, she had become the Cinderella of sport. And of course, Wilma Rudolph, she was the ultimate Cinderella with her remarkable rise from illness and poverty to international fame. Okay, but don't think for a moment that the Cold War actually fixed the problem of race in the United States. This will be made very clear by a pair of Black athletes who will use the Olympic medal stand as their platform to tell the world about American racism in 1968.
That's all for now. Next time on The Untold History of Sports in America, presented by One Day University. He's handsome, he's fast, he's pretty, and he can't possibly be beat. He's Muhammad Ali.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.